So with that, Penelope's here to share her experience, strength, and hope with us this evening. So at this point, I'm going to hand you over to Penelope. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you,
Thank you,
Penny.
Tony.
Thank you,
Hi.
Tony.
Yes. Hi. My name's Penelope and I'm an addict.
Hello,
Penelope.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Hello.
It's so good to have places to go with people who understand, as it says in the literature about us. We don't manage very well on our own. Generally, the idea that however much common sense we were brought up with or learned in our life, it doesn't work. The thing that works for me and what I feel when I go to meetings is a warmth and within myself, and it's the same when I talk to another addict about any problems I have, and particularly since I've had illness in my recovery, because it's such a dodgy area when medication is involved. First of all, I'll tell you a little bit about my story, make it as short and brief and painless as possible, although it was very painful at the time. I started using in the 60s. My addiction was very much about, having fun and, going out, being in, all the drugs that you take when you're listening to music, and it was fun, and then it stopped being fun, and then the violence started, the arguments, the disagreements, and the disagreement within myself, where I feel like at one point I lost contact with my higher power, although I didn't know it at the time. It was a kind of thing where I just got lost, and I think I've seen many stories, films about that time, because culturally, rock and roll, and it was all about using. It was all about the drugs, and and it was a cultural thing, and I used one drug after another, and the kind of 60s progression of smoking it, getting high on it when somebody came back from somewhere like Morocco, or, and or India, and they had the good stuff, and then it started to be like I couldn't go to work, and my ability to concentrate on anything, went, and then my belief in myself, my confidence, self-esteem, I lost contact with myself, and I just kept taking stronger and stronger drugs until I could find that again. It was a long using story. It was quite painful, and I ended up in living in a caravan. The money was gone, the cars were gone, even the phone was gone. I had a phone box up the road, which in desperation, I used to try and score. I lived with someone who was using. I'd left and taken my children to this place. I often say that, kind of dragged my children around on my rock bottom, and it wasn't pleasant for any of us. The pain of watching someone destroying themselves with drugs. I tried suicide several times and never worked. I was always shocked to wake up and find that I was still here. I didn't know how to live with or without drugs. That's that thing in the reading, And you know, I mean, I've through nothing to do with me, I was able to get clean. I think God must have known. I often think this is and know this inside that because there's no, it was miraculous what happened. No, you know, nobody would have ever given me a hell's chance of finding any way out of the situation I was in other than death, you know. And you know, I worried about my children, and what would happen to them. You know, they are another part of my story, but I won't go into that now. I mean, I was taken to meetings by people in the fellowship. You know, they call it, I mean, in America they call it asphalt recovery, and we had the meeting in the car, the meeting when we got there, the meeting after the meeting, and then you know, if we went for dinner or coffee, you know, and it was like that. I've always had help from people in the meetings and the fellowship, and so that's why I've always done a lot of service, to as a way of paying back. You know, I can't give it back to those people, but I can pay it to the future for others who can't have yet to find this fellowship and the solution, people that were in that situation that I found myself in. And my, you know, my experience of this Christmas has been, you know, quite amazing, because I spent a lot of years using all the drugs up before Christmas, thinking we're having a good time, and then a period of like Christmas to New Year to January, February, March, more work coming along for, you know, my partner, and you know, the being able to pay the drugs bill to get out of hock with the dealers and end up, you know, staying using, you know. And this Christmas was completely different. My children suffered from, you know, all of that, and more. And I, you know, I watched them with their children, and you know, all of us together. This Christmas was just, it was just a classic Christmas. And I feel like, you know, if staying clean just for one extra day, you know, provided me with that experience, was worth it. I mean, I have to say, you know, my clean date is the 1st of April, 1989, and for that I'm truly grateful that I tried so hard. You know, it was like months after I found NA, I argued about all the different drugs. Do I have to stop this one, that one? I thought I could do it on my own, you know, and realized I couldn't, and I didn't know how to surrender. You know, I tried white knuckling, you know, and finally, just don't know what was. I was just determined to go to the meeting and be clean for that 24 hours and get a white hearing. And I always messed up. I lived with someone who didn't want me to be clean and always turned up with the right drugs that I liked. And you know, and it was just, it went on and on and on. Anyway, eventually I got that one day, the 24 hours, and I wouldn't pick it up before then, the white key ring. And once I got the white key ring physically in my hand, I was like, no one's taking this off me, including me. Well, 30 years later, I know it's fast forwarding a lot of years, and so much happens in those times. My, you know, 30 years later, we had this party, and I felt like I was sitting on a plateau of a mountain, you know, going on or something. It was just so wonderful. And I thought, well, I've lived through so many, there's, I've just lived through everything clean that you could throw at me. And then, of course, the last 3.5, nearly 4 years, I have had one illness after another. A lot to do with my my bones, because I have chronic arthritis, and have found solutions that don't involve any mood altering drugs, alternatives, healing and acupuncture have been some of them. Mainly exercise, because I understand that's what's good for them. You know, I've researched all of the things that are parts of my body that it affects. I have had localized steroid injections. And recently I've had an operation on my shoulder, which was keyhole surgery. And all of it has been really painful. In the middle of all that, I had severe acute necrotizing pancreatitis, which destroyed half of my pancreas, which I have to take enzymes to do the work that that part that got destroyed did. I ran out when I was at my son's house. I think I had too many gherkins. What a thing for an addict to say. I mean, one or too many gherkins, and I hadn't had the enzymes, and found myself rolling around on the floor in the middle of the night thinking I was having another pancreatic attack. I did, however, have an alternative version of what helps with my digestive problems. I mean, I've always had digestive problems. I had an ulcer, and so that means it makes it more difficult for me to take anti-inflammatories, and they're things that I can't take, you know. And also, you know, my allergy to drugs and opiates make it incredibly difficult to deal with the pain. My sponsor knows, and he has had that same kind of need to take the drug of choice that he had, and really understands and has helped me enormously. And the doctors and the physio know about it. Not all of the medical profession understand. I have, however, got a friend who is a doctor, medical doctor, medical psychiatrist as well. And he has reassured me, you know, that opiates are a very wonderful drug when you have pain. You know, you can't be cut open if you don't have something like an opiate, because you couldn't bear that sort of pain. And I understand that. And it's this whole exercise for the last 3.5-4 years has been to actually find for myself, even though I have sponsored people who have to take mood altering mental health medication, and I've had experiences of very kind of extreme people in meetings who will tell you, you're using, you can't use, stop taking all pills, otherwise you're not clean and we won't talk to you. And that's, I mean, one woman I sponsored ended up in a lockup ward and with her eyes rolling back in her head, phoning me, pleading me for help, because these people had told her to stop taking her her medication for psychosis. And so that really encouraged me to discover what the mental health aspect of things people get prescribed medication for. And one of the things that we have got a piece of literature that that talks about, you know, it's nobody's business really, other than the member, the member sponsor, the member's medical doctors, and the member's higher power. You know, but in a meeting like this, I understand that it is important, because we could get lost not knowing. I mean, I felt very lost when I felt this horrific kind of news that I was given, that I had to take medication for this condition, and how was I going to stay clean? And then I realized that there's a line. And it's like defects of character. There's always a line, you know. Self-pity is one of them. You know, it's like I don't feel sorry for myself, and in grief as well, you know. And there's a point at which we cry, you know, and then suddenly we realize that we are actually pushing the side of the envelope, you know, that there is. You know, there is a point at which we can stop feeling sorry for ourselves. And I've found all defects to be like that as well. But, you know, particularly in this situation where, I mean, I had one doctor was saying to me, you have to listen to your body. You have to kind of, you know, you can't heal when you're in distress. And then another doctor said to me, you can't take more than this much a day. And someone else who said, well, you just listen to your body and trust yourself to know. And I thought, I'm an addict. I can't trust myself with anything. And I have found so many people in recovery that actually understand and have helped me to, you know, to accept the fact that I am still clean, and I was in so much pain at one point, and someone said to me, you don't have to be a martyr to this, you know, to the pain. You don't have to. I mean, in my past, I know a couple of people in America, one of whom drove, when he was 17, drove his car into a tree when he was out of his head, and the steering wheel went through, broke his breastbone and his spine in three places. And obviously in recovery, he was, you know, he was in a lot of chronic pain from that. Now, he told me that the way that he dealt with the pain was to accept it. And I never really understood that until this time when I have had this. It's like there is a point at which I have to accept. And you know, the surrender that comes before that is very much about understanding that I have an illness, but also that I'm a human being, and that there's a balance between that, and that I do have a higher power. A God in my understanding that has brought me this far, and that's what I rely on to be, you know, to be able to live my life, to be happy, joyous, and free, and still be clean. You know, to be able to, you know, because there is that point. I mean, a few years ago, I had an abscess on my tooth, which was a post-crown, which had been, you know, all the work had been done on it, and then this abscess blew up underneath, and my face was up like a balloon one side, and I was in horrific pain. I was taking all this paracetamol and making myself really sick, and because, you know, I thought I knew better than the dentist who had prescribed me codamol. No, paracodamol, that's right. And I was refusing to take it, and I had to have antibiotics, and I was taking both. And then, you know, my sponsor was like really cross with me. She said, well, why do you think that you know better than the dentist to not take this? You have to take what you've been prescribed as prescribed. And I did, and I survived it and had the work done, and the abscess went away. And suddenly I found myself, you know, the work after the last dental visit, and I was in my drive in the car, and I looked at the dustbin that was side of my house, and I knew I had some of the paracodamol left, and I thought, well, you know, that's that thinking, that addict thinking. It comes and creeps around you, and it says, well, you might as well finish the packet, you know. Nobody had known. But the thing was, I'd know, and I knew that I'd know. So I did what I've always done when I'm in trouble, ask for help. And I phoned my sponsor, and she said, it's okay. You know, because I told her, I think I should put them in the bin. But what I'm scared about is that I'll be in the bin in half an hour thinking, where are they? And she said to me, it's okay. You can put them in the bin. I couldn't move out of my car. And she said to me, it's okay, you can do that. And I did that, and I didn't forage in the bin to get them out again. And I learned a lot from that. And there is that line where, you know, where I say, you know, it's not about using, but it's about medicine. And, you know, I have to take medicine for blood pressure. I didn't want to take it, and my son begged me to take it. And he said, you know, Mum, you don't want to be like your mother, who had a stroke and lost her speech and her memory. You need to take it because it's medicine. And so I, you know, I had ascribed it to the fact that I had stopped meditating for a while. And I know that meditation lowers your blood pressure. And so I was convinced that I could do it on my own. I have the same problem with cholesterol. But the medication for that makes me feel so ill, I want to die. So I do use diet for that. Recently, I discovered that I have a food allergy, which is cheese. It causes me to have migraine. And one of my favorite foods is cheese. And I've lived through Christmas. You know, other people are like, oh, everybody's drinking and everybody's taking drugs and in the family. But no, they have the cheese board with all these different cheeses, and the children are asking which cheese is this. I mean, I feel like such a lightweight when I think about it, you know, that cheese is the kind of thing that I had a problem avoiding at Christmas. But, you know, I'm glad I did, because it's a week of hell. With migraine, it's not just a headache, it's an illness, and it just feels awful. I won't go into it now, but, you know, I started to look at the instructions for the pills that they were prescribing me for migraine, and that didn't work. I found other methods, like I've talked about before, that help with the migraine. I've had vertigo as well, and that, similarly, that is very frightening. You know, if I watch something like a Tom Cruise film, you know, with him hanging out of a very tall building, that sets my stomach spinning, and then the world starts spinning with it. You know, that it's very frightening. I think vertigo is one of the most frightening things, trying to walk down the road and thinking that the pavement is the ceiling, and the sky is the floor, you know, it is, that's scary too. You know, my ongoing pancreatitis is something I really have to watch, and it's annoying having to take four pills, capsules every time I have anything to eat. And I've found that my appetite's changed since I had that. I nearly died. I'm not kidding. I was in hospital. Normally they send people home. They couldn't find out what had caused it. I don't drink a bottle of whiskey a week, and I, you know, a day. I mean, and you know, I haven't got gallstones. You know, I think in desperation they were going to take my gallbladder out, but it's like they never discovered what it was. And a healer I went to said it was viral. And when I asked the professor that I spoke to at the end, my medical team, he said to me it could have possibly been viral. It's very rare. I love recovery, and I treat it as a precious gift that I've been given. You know, part of those gifts are the diamonds I've experienced this Christmas with my grandchildren. And the magic of that time. And I think I've just about run out of things to say. I don't know if that was the right time. I'm very grateful for all the meetings that I'm on, you know, do service, and this meeting in particular has been wonderful. At times when, you know, the illness and recovery is something we didn't have years and years ago. And my sponsee, when I was living in, she kind of helped me. She looked up where the nearest illness and recovery meeting was after I'd been given a diagnosis for something. And I went to the meeting, and they gave me the booklet in times of illness to read. Illness in recovery. I'm sorry. And the bit that stood out for me was, acceptance, which it is. I've talked about it a lot, but it is. And part of that is I'm 75 in about a month or 4 weeks, 5 weeks, something like that. And I never thought I would reach this age. I thought I was going to die back in my caravan before I got clean. And, it's to be expected when you get older. And part of the acceptance is accepting the fact that I'm older. I mean, I do struggle with the idea that my children have expectations on me, because I've always been quite active. I'm quite stoic in terms of what I've gone through in the last few years. And they just think, oh, Mum's better now. But they didn't see me rolling around on the floor in agony the night before last. But, you know, I knew what the solution was. I was praying, and I had this, like, inner voice that said, you know what the solution is, just get the fuck up, sorry to swear, and go and you know, find the appropriate medication, which was for the pancreas, and it worked. Anyway, hope you all have a really good time through the holidays, and that something I've said helps if you are in any pain or have any illness in recovery. Thank you, Tony, for asking me to share.